The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover.
Hi, everybody. I'm Karen.
And I'm Jeff.
And welcome back to another Gotham Undercover. We're part of Golden Spiral Media, so find us at goldenspiralmedia.com or the show's Facebook page by searching for Gotham Undercover. And tonight we will be talking about, I'm sorry, everyone, I'm going to say this up front, I have a little cold, so I'm going to be faltering a little bit. I apologize. Unreservedly. We're going to be talking about episode 3 of season 2 of Gotham, Last Laugh. And it was indeed a last laugh, was it not?
It was.
And quite a surprise to me.
Yeah, I think it was a surprise to most folks.
Yeah. Now, I have been actually, up until about, I don't know, 2 episodes ago, I mean, that close to now, the premiere of season 2, I have been referring to Jerome as Joker in quotes.
Uh-huh.
Because I just wasn't sure how to refer to him. But once they were doing like the Rise of the Villains thing, I had resigned myself to the fact that they were going to make him the Joker.
Right.
And then he did this. And I thought, well, just when I was getting settled... So I guess we should talk about things. What did you give this episode?
I gave this episode 9 Jokers laughing, and that is plural.
Right. Many Jokers laughing.
Yes.
Yeah, and there were many more than 9, but yeah, you counted the 9 that you liked, and, and those are the ones you had in your deck.
Yeah.
I gave it 8 Dirty Boogies by the Brian Setzer Orchestra.
Oh. Yeah, I picked that up. I was like, hey, that's Brian Setzer.
Yeah. I like that song, actually. It's
Me too.
It's a great album. I don't know why I like that album so much, because I'm usually not into that kind of music, but I did like them. And when I heard that music, I kind of tapped my foot and caught myself. So I had to put it in there. So let's see. Where should we start? Well, first of all, I want to give a shout out to Mark Margolis, who played Paul Cicero in this episode. Again, reprising his role as Paul Cicero.
Mm-hmm.
He has been in several comic book movies, TV shows. He had a small part in the Daredevil movie, and he played Felix Faust in Constantine, who was also a magician, which I find interesting. Mm-hmm. But, you know, more notably, he played Gianni Moretti in Person of Interest. And then, of course, his big role was Tio Salamanca in Breaking Bad. And I like him anytime I see him in anything. And I'm sad that he's gone from this show. Although he probably would have been anyway with the death of Jerome.
Yeah.
So it's bittersweet, but at least they kind of gave him a real send-off.
Right. You know, I really like his character, and he, like you said, he's been in things, and it seems to me that they've done a real good job this season of casting people to play those roles well.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have a big role last season and this season, but he plays his roles to the T. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, that quality actor just putting that spin on that character. So he did an excellent job.
Yeah, he was great in this one too. And as the ersatz dad, I mean, he was strong enough to stand up to Jerome, even though he knew it was the end. You know,
right.
He knew Jerome was going to kill him. But he wasn't going to back down. He still taunted him.
Mm-hmm.
He still used that leverage he had over Jerome, knowing that taunting him was going to allow him to kind of get in his last laugh. you know?
Right. And it's, you know, more than just a taunting to me. It was, you know, it's a prophecy.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll get into this later, but that whole speech was so powerful. And the way that he voiced it and kind of gave that speech was kind of a clue to what's coming. But that scene was just, you have his acting, and then you have Tigress in the background just rifling through the fridge looking for breakfast. Right. I mean, she didn't get her breakfast, and she's like, come on, hurry up. He doesn't have any food. Let's get this over with.
No raw steaks for me.
No.
So, it was great. The whole scene in the apartment was good. Jerome was playing on point, acting crazy, talking about how he was roughed around during his time in the circus, and showing him the letters saying that there was like hidden messages in Braille.
Yeah.
In the letters, and kind of giving us a little more insight into his character just at the last moment, you know, just before we lose him as a character. So giving us a little background, like little stealth background information just before we lose both characters. So
You know, he was monologuing in a way that makes sense to the story.
Right.
It's not just extraneous, you know, he was doing it in a way that makes sense in the continuity of the story.
Right.
But I loved how it kind of explains to me and the us in the audience how smart Theo is that, okay, we need a fall guy. Let's frame Jerome's dad, make it look that way. And he's just on top of things.
Yeah. Yeah. Theo definitely was doing some chess playing in this episode.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. So let's talk about the main story.
Okay.
Get that out of the way. And we're going to talk about the minor story separately. So we might skip over some parts. Like, you know, there's a behind the scenes with Barbara, Theo, and Tabitha that we're going to skip over a little bit and talk about that afterwards. A very short little Gordon and Bullock side story. And then there's some extraneous parts at the ball and a little section with Bullock and the Penguin that we'll also talk about later. So those are kept on the wings for us to talk about later. But right now we're going to talk about Joker's literal last laugh, as I put it in our notes.
Yeah.
So Jerome and Tabitha, they find out where Cicero is. And here's where I'm assuming they probably have a mole in the PD that gives the same tip to them as gives it to Bullock and Gordon, because they get it at the same time, essentially.
Mm.
You know, they get the tip of where Cicero is just when Jerome and Tigress are heading there. And it would make sense that Theo also has contacts within the PD.
Yeah, I can see that. The only question that I have about that, it being the same person, is the timing of that. I kind of question that because of Jim and Bullock getting there
late
before the crime is actually done.
Mm.
So I'm thinking if somebody's giving them information, they're going to give them time to complete the crime and then send. But who knows? There could have been a mix-up and somebody's going to not be alive because of getting that clue to Jim and Bullock early. But who knows?
Right. It was just a thought I had because, you know, always in these shows, there's always these coincidences that, you know, everyone makes it there at the same time. They all find out information at the same time. And I kind of want to tie up loose ends like that in these shows. So I'm hoping Theo has contacts that would also get this information to them.
Sure.
Now, again, this is me thinking too much. So I guess I should just hand wave. So they're going to go kill Cicero. And just as they do this, you know, the speech thing, and I'm going to play the speech at the end of the episode. We just discussed it a little bit here. So, you know, we don't have to really talk about it. Is there anything you want to talk about with the speech? And I mean, we talked about Tabitha rifling through the fridge and Jerome kind of mocking him, Cicero mocking back, Jerome talking about his abuse at the hands of his mother while Cicero just looked on, hidden messages in the letters.
Yeah. Yeah. What I want to cover about it, we'll cover later.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's all that happening. And just as Jerome hears Bullock and Gordon heading up to talk to Cicero, he shoves a knife into Cicero's eye, killing him, and escapes out the window. He and Tabitha escape out the window. So Gordon and Bullock charge in, and Cicero's booby-trapped with some sort of knockout gas.
Right.
And Bullock gets hit full force with it, and Jim drags him out of the room, and he gets, like, I guess, secondhand smoked.
Yeah, exactly.
And they get knocked out in the hallway. Now, Jerome and Tabitha leave them there, although Tabitha does enjoy inflicting a little pain out in the hallway. And, of course, that is because there are more plans left in store for the two.
Right. And I like how she's got a mask on when she goes after Jim so that she's still kind of hidden from the dealing. So there's not a direct tie there. So he can't identify her later.
Sure. And it makes one wonder, although not so much now, why Jerome wasn't wearing a mask. And of course, that's because Theo didn't care. If
yeah,
he was
exactly.
identified.
Yeah.
Again, it's Theo moving pieces around on the board.
Right. And the fact is, Jim and Bullock know Jerome was broken out. They know he was part of, you know, the Maniacs group. So they were specifically seeking him out.
Right.
So,
yeah. And it was definitely a frame job, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, he did this actual crime. He committed this actual crime right in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they have him dead to rights on this one as well. So, and they couldn't say the same about Tabitha.
No.
You know, they couldn't have pinned this on her at all. But they could have gotten him for this. You know, they had him on camera doing all kinds of things as Jerome.
Right.
So he was definitely setting up some kind of war chest on Jerome, essentially, where he was protecting Tabitha from things like that.
Exactly.
So you could see things going on. And, you know, the whole Maniacs crew, now you could see that he was using them as kind of a front, definitely, for him.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, each one has their roles, and he specifically chose that group out of the ones he got out of Arkham.
Right.
So they each had their role.
Right. And I think all of them thought that they were special, when really they are special, but not as far as Theo's concerned so much.
No, no. I mean, they're chess pieces. They're,
yeah.
They're
pawns.
They're pawns, or maybe even knights, but they're...
Sure.
They're there to protect the king and, you know,
right.
and his queen. So
right. His queen, which is Tabitha.
Right.
Right. And Barbara might be, I don't know, a knight. But I don't know how much protection she has either. Mm. But we'll see. We'll
yeah.
see. So later on, they make it to the ball. Jerome and Barbara are on center stage, and Theo and Tabitha stay in the crowd because they're patrons.
Right.
And they are brother and sister.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jerome and Barbara call up Bruce. Now, I just mentioned Theo and Tabitha are brother and sister. We're not going to talk about that yet. That's later.
Yeah.
They call up Bruce first and they use him for the lady in the box trick. But, you know, it's not really a Jerome trick yet. It's a, you know, a regular magic trick right now.
Yeah.
And there's
the great Rodolfo.
Right. There's a split personality joke, which I found humorous.
Yeah, I love that too.
Yeah, a little Batman stab there. And then they call up the deputy mayor. Now, this was rather rude of them. Also, Barbara calls him up, brings him on stage, does a little bow, and her mask falls off. And she winks at Lee.
Mm-hmm. Who's already suspicious.
Yeah.
Because she's like, when Barbara took up Bruce to the front, she's like, do you know that person? She's already suspicious, but this really... I mean, it confirmed it to her.
Right. So, whoops, calls James, and then she gets taken. At this point, this is where Jerome says that nobody's getting out alive, kills the mayor, and this is when the henchmen jump out and bullets fly. So, ouch. Now, Bruce and Selena have already chatted once, but, of course, this is where he says, Selena, and runs after her, and they end up hiding, which is fortuitous.
Mm-hmm.
And I like this. At this point, also, Jerome uses Lee's phone to call Gordon. And he tells him to watch the TV. And this led to a humorous interchange where he gives out his demands. And I quoted it from the script. $47 million, a helicopter, obviously. The dry cleaning I left at Mr. Chang's. Be careful, the man is crook. And, I don't know, a pony.
I love that. I love that. The thing I liked about this, you know, I'm like trying to figure out what movie that's a reference to. But the thing that got me is Jerome's hair. The way he had his hair parted and slicked back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking James Cagney.
He's
playing James Cagney as the, you know, a gangster. You got the muscle out there in the crowd with the Tommy guns,
right?
He's doing this heist maneuver, and that's all I could think about is, okay, what heist movie is that quote from?
See, and I don't think it's an actual quote lifted from anything, but
yeah.
And plus the Brian Setzer music going in the background, so yeah. There's the whole vibe from another century thing. You know, they try and keep it super nebulous. We've talked about this before, that they're keeping it time nebulous.
Right.
Although I love that quote of him just being silly. 47 is a number that's used a lot. It is the magic number in Star Trek, for one thing. They use it for bases and for like 47 tribbles or 47 this, 47 that. There's a base 147. It's used over and over in Star Trek history. And also 47 is a number on Castle, which is used over and over and over again on Castle. So it seems to be a number that people use on TV shows and things like that. I don't know if this was a reference to Star Trek. It might have been. Sometimes people give Star Trek a shout out by using the number 47. I believe that's where it started on Castle, is that they were using it as a shout out to Star Trek, and then they just started using it. A helicopter, obviously. I mean, that's funny. Why would you not ask for a helicopter? And then the dry cleaning I left at Mr. Chang's, the man is a crook. Of course, you know, he would call someone else out for being a crook.
Exactly.
And then he wants a pony. I mean, who doesn't want a pony? That's great.
I loved earlier in the scene where when he's still the great Rodolfo, that he's like, ladies and germs, please ogle my lovely assistant. You know, he's like, you know, throwing in the stick there. I mean, he's playing it to a T.
I know. And Lee seems to be the only one who is not completely taken in by him.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you couldn't be. He's so over the top.
Right.
Although magicians, I guess, are. And let me, I have this in our feedback section, but I'm going to go ahead and pull it now.
Yeah.
April O'Neil said on Facebook, the word magician was spoken 12 times, unless I miscounted. And again, I use this site called Springfield Springfield, and they have scripts, you know, transcripts from almost every TV show, on the air, off the air, everything, every movie ever. And I use it a lot in order to pull quotes. And I double checked, and there was exactly 12. So she was right. And I have no idea why they would use it that many times, but I'm wondering if they're actually like trying to get into our head and tell us something, like, is Zatanna going to be on the show? Are they going to like put the magician from the old continuity comics in, or is it continuity? What is the comic that they bought out? I can't remember.
Oh.
Where Blue Beetle and all of them are from.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know the company, but I'm zoning on the name.
It starts with a C. I can't remember. Yeah. Oh, God. I usually remember stuff like that. I'm really sorry, guys. I have a cold. Again, I'm going to blame everything on that. They bought out that old comic company where the Blue Beetle and Booster Gold and a lot of other comic book heroes came from. And there was a hero called the Magician, and they used him a couple times, and then they dropped him because of Merlin. They decided to go with Merlin. And now, you know, Merlin is on Arrow, so I'm assuming okay. They wouldn't use him. But if they use this other magician,
right.
You know, it would be obscure enough to go on Gotham. But, you know, it wouldn't be out of the ordinary to use someone like that on the show.
Yeah.
So it makes me wonder, are they going to use someone like that? And, of course, Zatanna is, like, the magician of DC Comics.
Right. Or they could use her father.
Sure. You know.
Sure. But the comic book company was Charlton Comics.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's so. It. Thank you
Thank
so
you,
much.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
Thank you. I'm glad you did that while I was talking. Thank you very much. Yes, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
Well, I was close. I wasn't too far off. So it makes me wonder if they're trying to clue us into the fact that they're going to introduce some sort of magician onto the show, or were they just telling us that they're going to pull a trick on us in this episode?
Yeah, I don't know. The answer's in front of you, or, you know, it's just interesting because the original musician.
I did that last week, didn't I?
So the original magician is in the box.
Right.
Like at the beginning, you know, the beginning of that scene, you know, they're like, he's like, Jerome's like, I'm not going to need that box. And inside the box is the magician.
Magician, yeah.
And I'm like, okay. So you've got, you know, multiple people pulling tricks.
Right.
During this episode and deceptions and illusions.
Right.
So who knows?
Yeah, it could have been a reference to the fact that there are many magicians on this in this episode or
sleight of hand. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Although I prefer to think of this as Theo just playing chess. Cause I like the chess analogy.
Me too.
Chess is a much more drawn out thinking man's game. And I think he is not a magician. He is not pulling the wool over anyone's eyes. He is definitely laying a foundation for a much bigger game.
Oh, most definitely. He's got an agenda, and he knows what needs to happen to see that walked out.
Yeah, and he is laying out the moves, like 10 moves ahead.
Yeah.
You know, he knew that Jerome was going to die here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he knew it. So I think he already has like 10 more moves planned out. So I prefer to think of this as chess, at least in his case.
Yeah. I mean, he is showing the moves to his opponent and even to people on his chessboard. He gave Jerome enough to make it believable, to make him walk it out. He gave him enough of the plan so that he was, you know, putting his trust in Theo. And then, you know, but he's holding things back.
Sure.
And truthfully, I think he's doing the exact same thing with Barbara.
I think
we'll
so
see.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that's true as well. You know, it would be like if someone was playing chess and the pieces were sentient enough to know that someone was moving like if the pawn was sentient enough to know that it was moving two steps forward, but not sentient enough to know that it was going to get captured that turn.
Right.
So, you know, he was the pawn that knew he was moving two steps ahead and thinking that's a good thing. And then not knowing that the next step was that he was going to get captured.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I feel like that's Theo is just looking over the whole board, seeing the whole picture. Whereas, you know, no one on the board can really see the whole picture. And, you know, it just depends on who's sitting on the other side of the table. Is there going to be a group of people on that on the other side of that table, or is it just one person? Is it going to be James Gordon on the other side of that table with a lot of big pieces in front of him that don't fall down? You know, I'd like to think that's the case.
Yeah, or it could be that the opponent is good, just in a literal sense.
Yeah.
And because I don't think at this point James or Bruce or any of them are the chess master to go against it. So I think, you know, they're moving, they're making their moves, and whether those moves are successful or not, you know, we'll see. But I, like I said, at this point, I think they're on the opposite side, but is there a chess master on that opposite side? I don't think so yet.
So like the computer of good.
Right.
There we go. So we just have to pray that the pieces stay up.
Right.
On
exactly.
that other side. Okay. So at this point, after these demands, Theo steps up, and I put, it is on live television after all, which is essentially, that's what Jerome tells James Gordon when he calls him on the phone. It is on live television after all.
Yeah.
And he steps up to save the day. He knows it's on live television. He steps up to save the day. And I think he's worked all this out with Barbara, because he and Barbara are getting very close and cozy with each other. Barbara knocks him out. And he's there on the stage, laying, you know, for the whole performance. I don't think he is really knocked out.
No, I don't either.
I think she has put on a bit of a show.
Mm-hmm.
Selena and Bruce are backstage, and they part ways. So she goes outside, and Bruce says he's not going to leave Alfred and the rest of them in there and escape. So it's definitely turning the whole interchange between Selena and Bruce is definitely a Catwoman Batman situation.
Yeah, exactly. And that's so cool to see that beginning stages and to see her character kind of developing into that. You know, she plays for her own rules and she'll help whoever to get by, but it's that kind of back and forth, that beginning
right.
stages of that relationship.
Mm-hmm. And of course, she was there when his parents died, at least in this continuity.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows James Gordon. So it's fortuitous that she left, because she runs into James outside and guides him inside.
Right.
And that changes everything, because he gets inside. He meets up with Bruce behind the scenes just as Bruce is about to step up. And this sets up the whole plan of getting out. And it, of course, helps Theo, because when they make their move, I mean, it ends up that James sends Bruce out onto the stage with a gun in his pocket. He hands it to Alfred. And then that means our heroes have a gambit to play.
Mm-hmm.
And Theo's on the stage. He has a gambit to play. Really, the only gambit not to play is Jerome's.
Yeah.
He has to think on his feet.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got two people coming at him and really no outs. The only thing he could do is kill someone. Lee, Bruce, whoever.
Right.
You know, whoever he has handy. And he doesn't know that Barbara could be a target at this point.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't go after Barbara, even though she's right there. You know, he thinks of Barbara as his ally. So He wouldn't do that. Although it would probably have screwed things up if he went for Barbara.
Yeah, yeah.
That would have been interesting, an interesting move. So at this point, you know, it's all set up. They get to the point where he's holding Bruce with a knife to his neck, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they can't get a good shot. Theo steps up and, quote unquote, saves the day.
Yeah. The thing about Theo, I know earlier he was playing to the camera.
Uh-huh.
Giving the...
Oh, yes, it was very overly dramatic.
I mean, giving the audience and the media the clips that they needed.
Mm-hmm.
But part of me is just doing a facepalm going, how can people not see through this?
Right.
I mean, I know that we know more than the audience know.
Right.
I mean, they're at the you know, the gala know, and the public know. But I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's good acting playing bad acting.
Right.
You know, it's like,
yeah, it was definitely not James Frain acting badly.
No.
It was him acting well at acting badly.
Yeah, exactly. And who knows? You know, that gives that edge of, okay, he's just an ordinary citizen and, you know, he's scared or doing whatever. But I think I'm kind of interested to know, you know, we'll never know this, so speculate on what Jerome thought was going to happen. I mean, obviously,
right,
he didn't know about Jim and Alfred having guns and that kind of stuff.
Sure.
You know, I'm kind of interested to see how he thought it would play out. Who knows?
I honestly think that Theo would just say to him, hey, you know, go in there. Mayhem will ensue. Maybe kill Bruce.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see him doing that.
Yeah, because he knew Bruce.
Yeah.
And I did like when he was just about to take Alfred and he said, it's about to get very butler brainy out here.
Yeah.
That was funny, too.
Yeah.
I meant to mention that. And then Barbara escapes at that point as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm quite sure Theo and Barbara had this all worked out. So Barbara was in on it.
Right.
Definitely.
Right.
And I really do think Theo laid it all out to him, to Jerome. As saying, you know, just go in, do what you do best. You're the best at this.
Yeah.
Go on in, buddy.
The ringmaster.
You're my man.
Yeah.
And, you know, he set him up. Jerome was the type that as long as you gave him a little flattery, he ignored everything else.
Right.
That was it for him. The flattery was enough. As long as you gave him that little seed of happiness, he ignored any warning bells in his head.
Right. He was that number two guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about that he was the number two guy. He enjoyed being the spokesman or the, you know, whoever behind the scenes doing the talking. He enjoyed being and filling that role.
Mm-hmm.
And so he knew his role.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it came to as a complete surprise to him. And I think, you know, you could kind of sense the betrayal there as he was dying and saying, you know, to Theo, you know, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
You promised. Yeah, you could sense that betrayal, like, because he had found a calling. He had found his role.
His dad, essentially.
Well, yeah. I mean, he had found that position and he was comfortable. He had that somebody that he respected over him. And you just sense that betrayal.
Yeah. That was probably the worst way for him to go out.
Mm-hmm.
Was at the hands of the man he trusted the most
right.
in his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fitting, I think, for him, and it made for the Joker legacy.
Exactly.
So, yeah, crazy.
You know, the legacy of, you know, that his father laid out in that prophecy, and the producers have said that the Joker and even some other characters like Black Mask and some other ones, they might not necessarily introduce that set character from the continuity. It's the idea of the Joker is what they are putting forth. And so this was kind of the seeds of the Joker going forth, where you see people picking up that madness and carrying it on.
Right.
Doubting that, you know, any of the people that we necessarily saw would be that person, but kind of laying those seeds out there for that Joker legacy.
Right. Yeah, it's like the crazifying of Gotham.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, it's spreading his madness to others for them to take up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's infecting the city. It's very medievally, if that's not a word, but you know what I'm saying.
It's yeah, like, exactly.
It's a very medieval type theme for a person's death to be infecting the city. So,
right, you know, we kind of got a picture of kind of how they were kind of starting that last year with the Red Hood.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had that whole group taking, you know, each successive person taking up the Red Hood and becoming crazy in the process. So
right.
It's that idea of the villains, that there is a legacy of villains in Gotham that gets picked up. It may not be the same villain. It may be the same name. And that's a comic book thing where you have different people inhabiting the mantle of a particular name, both right. heroes and villains. And so you kind of see that in this season with the Joker so far, that, you know, different ones are going to take up that mantle.
Maybe I should have taken that as a clue, since the Joker was the leader of the Red Hoods at one point.
Yeah, yeah. He was a Red Hood. Yeah.
Whoops. So, yeah, that's the end of the episode, at least, where they show the Jerome death footage on TV and his legacy starts. So,
yeah.
Ouch. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it coming. I don't know about you, but...
Yeah, yeah. That's what bumped up my rating, is the surprise at the end and the laying out of, you know, kind of the Joker legacy that they had set up earlier.
Yeah, it was crazy. It took me completely by surprise. I was speechless when I watched it. I didn't know that they were going to convince me and then take it away from me all
so quickly.
Yeah, because I just had barely been convinced that he was going to be the Joker, because they were being so cagey with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so rude.
But so good.
I mean,
when they can cast somebody that seems to fit so well, and they can write it so well that, like I said earlier, the actors are chosen, and no matter how big or small their part, they're making that impact and making it their own.
Right.
And that's the one of the differences that I see from last season to this season, that intentionalness, but just carrying it on and casting very well.
Yeah. Wow. Bruno Heller, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Hail Bruno Heller is all I have to say. So I thought the next story we should talk about is maybe the behind the scenes with Barbara, Theo, and Tabitha, because that's an interesting little triangle. And what I'm seeing is that I don't think Theo and Tabitha are blood brother and sister.
I certainly hope not, with the comment that she gave to the deputy mayor, that she said that he's an animal in the sack.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
And we've seen...
How does she know that?
Well, we've seen hints that they might be more intimate than brother and sister have a right to be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's talking with Barbara in the beginning that it's good that she's got a friend, that she looks fierce, but she's fragile. And you're like, I don't know that necessarily sounds brotherly.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. And there have definitely been rumblings that they weren't really blood brother and sister anyway.
Right.
So it doesn't come as a huge shock to me. And of course, this sets up a bit of a triangle because we see also that there's a little thing happening between Barbara and Tabitha in this episode, which is interesting. And then later, there's also some little hanky-panky happening between Barbara and Theo.
Well, I think this kind of speaks to Barbara's character. We saw some of it last season, but we talked about it in, you know, episode one of this season, that she knows how to use her sexuality. That is one of her traits, her talents, whatever. She's going to use it to get the inside track.
Yes.
And to try to maintain power. But I'm really questioning, both Theo and Tigress know that she's been with both of them or trying to use that on both of
them. Well, now they do.
Yes. Theo, I don't think that's going to bother him because he really knows how to peg people.
Right. I think he knew already.
Right. But my question is, how jealous is Tigress going to be?
Right.
Yeah, that last scene where she's kind of looking in and seeing, are we going to see some major claws come out? That's my question.
Yeah. So, I think she only found out right there at the end of the episode.
I agree.
And I think there's going to be some sandpaperiness happening there.
Yeah.
And that is going to get interesting, I think. A bit of a love triangle, literally.
Is she going to choose her brother? I don't know.
What side is she going to take?
Right. And I want to kind of say this. We've been talking about the Court of Owls this season.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one of the YouTube guys that I watch is Charlie from Emergency Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I
love
it.
Thank you for passing that along to me, by the way. That was a really interesting clip.
I would encourage people to go out and check out his YouTube channel. There's a lot of shows that he covers, but he pulls in things from a lot of areas. And we had talked about the Court of Owls, and I've kind of looked at that storyline in the comics that they did recently. But I am wondering, he was bringing out that Theo is monologuing at the beginning how that his family founded and built Gotham. There's nothing that, you know, that they didn't do, but their name is on nothing. And in the comics, the Court of Owls, they had their fingerprints all across Gotham. And Charlie kind of brought out that the people in the Court of Owls are the rich, the powerful, and even the Waynes were involved.
Mm-hmm.
Far back. So my question is, are Theo and his sister Tabitha really sister and brother, or are they sister and brother in the sense that they are both a part of the Court of the Owls?
Mm.
They've both got that background in their history where it's a family of families, and so they are brother and sister in their cause, in their going forward. Is that where they get the brother and sister stick? I don't know. That's my speculation.
Could be.
Yeah.
They're both from the families that were part of the Court of Owls, and they want revenge, maybe?
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking, you know, Theo is positioning things. He's taking opposition out of the way. He's eliminated basically the mayor. He's taken out the deputy mayor. He's taken out the commissioner. Are we going to see Court of Owls people start filling that? Is he actually going to take the mayor's role? We don't know yet, but they're moving for the Court of Owls.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my question is Tabitha doing it because of, you know, that Court of Owls calling? Or is she doing it for Theo? I don't know. We'll see the breakdown.
Yeah.
Because if it's really about the Court of Owls and she's a part of the Court of Owls, she's not going to take it too far in punishing Theo.
Right.
But
she'll take it out on Barbara, though.
Right. But if it's, you know, if she's not a part of the court, she's just part of Theo's entourage, things may be a little challenging for Theo.
Right. And there's also the side, now was this in the Emergency Awesome clip that Barbara might also be from a Court of Owls family?
Right. There was some speculation there because of her family's wealth. But I don't, you know, he said that, Charlie said that he didn't believe that that was going to play out, at least in this, because of how the storyline's going for her. But, I mean, her family is well off, but they're not in Gotham anymore because when she went to go kill her parents last season, they had a little bit of a drive there.
Right.
So it wasn't
they were in, out of town, yeah.
They were in their house, but that house wasn't in Gotham. So,
I'm wondering if maybe that's why he has pulled her into his inner circle a little bit. That he kind of finds a bit of a kindred spirit in her.
It could be. It could be. I mean,
just a little bit. It's not like he trusts her 100%.
He trusts nobody 100%.
Right.
Even Tabitha, he doesn't trust 100%.
Right. But he has kind of made her the real leader of his group. Now, of course, she's the only one left.
Well, so, actually, you know, the Gotham PD is still searching for Aaron. So,
oh, that's right.
And so they have not been able to find him. And so I
amygdala,
put in my notes. I put in my notes, is he still alive or if he just not needed for this portion of, they didn't need him as muscle for this section, so he's not playing that part. So it's yet to see.
I'm assuming he's still out there.
Yeah, and until we see a body, I'm going to believe he's still out there. Yeah. So there's two of them left.
Okay, so two of them. Now, of course, she's the only one that was in this one, but she's the only one in his inner circle, definitely.
Right.
I can't see Amygdala being in his inner circle.
No, that's not his role.
No, he's muscle.
Yeah.
Definitely. I could see him being used by Tabitha, though.
Sure. Sure.
That would make an interesting storyline.
Yeah.
I also like when Theo tells Barbara that she's wearing a great cape.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, that was funny.
Those subtle nods.
Yeah, and the acting of James Frayne. I just have to say, the obvious and painful overacting, which was done on purpose because it was Theo Gallivant acting.
Right.
So it was him not being able to act, which was, I'm guessing it was hard for James Frayne to do because he's very subtle in his acting.
Yeah.
And then later on when he approaches Bruce, Alfred, James, and Lee, and he greets them like he's the hero there. Oh, I just was squirmy.
Yeah, I mean, his acting is very good. I mean, we've talked about the fact that he was on Orphan Black this past season, and
he was amazing.
You get that level of acting, you have to step it up if you're going to compete on Orphan Black when you've got characters playing multiple characters. And like I said, he is very good at playing those different roles.
Yeah. And I have to say, I don't know if he can beat that role for me in Gotham, because in one episode of Orphan Black, he made me go from hating him to loving him.
Yeah.
And I mean loving him.
Yeah.
So I really don't know if he can do that sort of thing for me in Gotham, but so far he is killing this role.
Yeah, he really is.
I love the whole chess master thing. One of my favorite parts of Farscape, which is by far, I think, probably my favorite show of all time, as far as, you know, storyline writing, overall sort of arc, inception sort of thing. It's hard for me to put into words, but was the whole Scorpius as a chess master thing.
Yeah.
He was the grand chess master. He had all the pieces laid out, and it played out over the whole series.
Yeah, it's, you know, that the ability of his acting is good, but the thing about it is you have to have the writers who can give him the material.
Right.
And that's the good thing that we're seeing this season is they know his strengths and they know how to write for him.
Yes.
They've
yes.
got a clear picture of what he's doing and they know how he acts. So they are writing to that. And much kudos to the writers this season for doing that.
And the casting directors. I mean, again, from the beginning, I have never had a fault with the casting of this show. And to pick up James Frain, I mean, that's just brilliant.
We've talked about this, but truthfully, seeing him cast in this season is one of the main reasons that I decided to keep up with it.
Yeah. Truly. Yeah. Truly. Now, if they could, and this is my big pet peeve with the show, really my biggest pet peeve with the show is the writing of the women on the show. Barbara is really the only woman that is being written with any meat right now.
Yeah.
And last season, she was just horrible.
Yeah.
And it's only when they made her bad that she has become a character of any note. So, I mean, even right now, Tabitha is only kind of a face.
Yeah, she's a character sketch at this point.
Right, a face of danger, sort of, right now. So I would like to see some sort of storyline with Tabitha. If this triangle works out to be anything, I would hope that Tabitha takes a bigger part in it. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, if Amygdala comes in, that would be great, as long as she takes a step up with him. It doesn't just become she's controlling Amygdala and Amygdala does all the acting.
Right.
So I'm keeping my fingers crossed on that point. And I do hope that Lee also, in this episode, she was very good, but it was a lot of I'm the damsel in distress and then I'm getting hit on. So I would like Morena to also have a bigger part because I know she can pull things off.
Right. And I think maybe hopefully that they know that she's wanting to be around for a while.
Yeah.
They can start.
Maybe write some more for her.
Writing more for her because another thing that Charlie brings out in the Emergency Awesome video is the character of Leslie Tompkins in the comics being a surrogate mom to Jim. You know, she's running a clinic in the area that's basically Crime Alley. And, you know, Charlie talked about how that motherly role is getting, you know, kind of converted over to Jim being more of a father figure and somewhat to Alfred too. But so since that role is kind of not there yet, you know, maybe they can bring that in maybe now that they've been introduced, that she can have that relationship with Bruce and start to, you know, that she and Jim can kind of be surrogate parents to him and kind of give more of a role and a depth. And even, you know, and I hope so at the station there that she can have more of a role within the police department as well. So hopefully they can draw those ties in together and start writing her with more of a purpose.
Yeah, I hope so. That would be nice. If they could be kind of his police parents.
Yeah.
That would be good. I mean, Alfred always needs to be his father figure.
Yeah.
But it would be okay for him to have other parental units.
Sure, sure.
So, well, next, let's talk about the little side stories of the Ball and Penguin. And then we could talk about Gordon and Bullock, too, at the same time.
Sure.
First, there was Gordon and Bullock. They're strong-arming criminals into handing out clues. I thought it was funny that they were throwing them out the window in front of each other, but they weren't dying because they were landing in this pile of garbage outside. But the ones inside didn't know that.
Exactly.
So, you know, good on them. It was funny because everyone inside was sweating bullets, thinking that they were going to be next to get tossed out the window. And, of course, everyone was safe outside. So, and I'm assuming getting arrested outside so they wouldn't come running back up the stairs, tattling.
Well, I wouldn't come running up the stairs regardless. I would be going in spreading the message that they mean business.
Right. Yeah. And this is, it was nice to see Gordon being uber passionate about this.
Mm-hmm.
Because he definitely cared for Essen, and he's very angry about what happened. And I think he takes it personally because of what Barbara did.
Right.
And he yells at the uniformed officer who tries to take down the crime scene tape. And I think that was his little reminder of what happened. Don't take that down because I have to wear that as a badge of something, you know, that's my blame.
Right.
I'm taking that on as a badge, and it has to remind me that it's my fault for leaving. Yeah. It's very heavy on his mind, I think, at this point. To the point where, as he's turning around yelling, there's Lee. Whoops. Sorry about that. So there's all that. Later on, of course, Gordon and Bullock recovering from the gas, they're deciding to go home while the ball is in full swing.
Right. And I love that scene.
Yeah,
because
me too.
You could see the growth in their relationship since last season, because Bullock is laying there. He is, last season he probably would have already left.
Mm-hmm.
But he cares about Jim, and he really thinks of him as a partner now.
Right.
And he's not going to go until he gets clearance.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to kind of plead with Jim to take some rest, to get some rest, to take it easy. But when he sees Jim's passion, he knows that it's better for him just to leave, because it's not going to do him any good to fight it. So you just see that partner relationship being just so strengthened there, and you just get that character study of the two of them together, and it just resonates. You know, it's a short scene, but you get the sense of the time that they've spent together being partners.
Yeah, the sense that they have each other's back now, where they're kind of making sure that both of them are okay before they leave. And then the little shout out also to the DC pairing of Essen and Bullock.
Right.
Kind of the intimation that Essen and Bullock were maybe partners in the past.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very nice as well, because they were partners in the comic book at one point. So saying that Essen has saved his ass hundreds of times. So that was nice to see that.
Oh, yeah.
It was a shout out to the comic book readers, obviously, because no one else would really get a reference like that. But I thought that was a very nice little point there.
Yeah, definitely.
So there was that. And then the whole thing at the ball, quite funny to see Alfred hitting on Lee several times. Very subtly.
Yes. You know, using that British charm.
Yes. I might have taken him up on it. Who knows? he does offer to take her to Chez Parnay, where she's been dying to go, and she pauses.
Yeah, she's like,
How much do I love James again? I've been wanting to go. Now, in the little clip that I mentioned last week, where Bruce kind of is suave and offers her the water, he actually offers her the water because he spots Selena.
Right.
And they left that out of the clip.
Yeah.
So I thought that was an interesting beat to leave out.
Yeah.
So that's the reason he goes to get the water, although he does still look rather ladies' man in doing so.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's like Lee is the belle of the ball here.
Well,
she's getting hit on by everyone.
And I love the fact that she's talking with him about his time in the service.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if you ever get bored of being a Royal Marine, you become a butler. You know, it's
right.
Like...
Yeah, well...
That's your next step up.
In his case, It's kind of true.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and she is very flattering to him.
Yeah.
You know, she puts on the charm for him, and then she realizes he is putting some moves on her, and she is not making it awkward, to her credit.
Yeah.
She's having a lovely discussion, but she realizes that she's getting hit on. And she hesitates for a minute with the invite to Chez Parnay. And he says that he knows the chef, that he can get her in. So he's dropping some names. So suave. So polite. I mean, how can you not at least pause and say, you know, what would it hurt? Are we really exclusive, me and James? I mean,
Can I go with Alfred and then let him down gently?
Right. Right?
And say, and not look bad and say, well, I'm kind of dating Jim.
Right. So. Or, you know, maybe if Jim shows up later, we can kind of work it out so that maybe we could all go. Or, you know, there's some cogs moving in her brain.
Exactly.
Trying to figure things out. And she knows that they all know each other. It's just she hasn't met them all yet.
Exactly.
And I do like them all knowing each other. It's very nice to see them, you know, meeting.
Right.
Because I feel like she should be part of their family.
Yeah.
In this continuity, at least.
Yeah, definitely.
So I thought that was cool. Gordon, at the end, when they're in their little group, Gordon tells Bruce that he was very, very brave.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bruce, of course, being the pre-Batman Bruce, says they were a team. And again, it's that foreshadowing into the whole Batman knows how to play up his strengths, which is he has a team.
Right, exactly.
And I love that they catch these subtleties on Gotham and they make sure to hit them.
Mm-hmm.
That he always knows, well, I might have been brave, but I wasn't the one who saved everybody.
Yeah.
We were all together.
Yeah. I mean, he knows that if Jim wasn't there, he would have run out and then, you know, who knows what would have happened.
Exactly.
So
you gave me your gun. You sent me out there. I gave it to Alfred. We all worked together.
Yeah.
And that is just the quintessential Batman is, we're a team.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's setting up that whole Gordon, Alfred, you know, as soon as Lucius is back, him, you know, they're a team. And hopefully Lee will become part of that team as well. It's just, I love that.
Yeah,
and
to hear
him say it out loud in this episode, it's very affirming that the mm-hmm. writers are getting that and
exactly.
are giving it out as well.
Yeah,
they really understand the character of Bruce, and they're affirming it this early in his character. So I like that very much.
Right.
And then Lee joins them, and there's a bit of awkwardness. Alfred is a little peeved at Bruce for not saying something. So I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
And then Lee and James make it to the precinct, and he takes down the police tape.
Yeah, he's closed the case. The killer has been, in his mind, caught. You know, he doesn't know the bigger plan behind. So with Jerome dead, it's safe to close that case.
Right. And of course it is. I mean, Jerome was the one that actually did kill her.
Right.
So at least in the short term, he got the person that killed Essen.
Right.
So there's that. Now, he doesn't know that the man he just finished shaking hands with was behind the whole thing.
Right.
But, you know, that's Gotham. He's going to learn that coming up. And then, of course, the very, very tiny plot point, which was also talked about in the Emergency Awesome clip that you sent me. And I thought was a great point, that it's definitely a setup for next week's episode. Bullet goes and visits the Penguin. It's a short little clip. And I also felt like it could have been left out, except that it's a setup for next week. And it really does show how Bullock feels about Oswald.
Yeah.
He goes to visit him. He says, I'm not happy about that thing you did to James, that you have this over him. And, of course, Oswald is intimidated. He doesn't mm-hmm. show it, but he is. And he says, oh, we're fine. You know, and I think what he's really saying is, I would never use that against him.
True.
But he doesn't mean it.
Right. And I think it shows Bullock's character that Bullock's got these ties, you know, he had ties to Fish and others, but he doesn't want that for Jim.
Right. And,
you know, it's like he recognizes his strengths and he doesn't want Jim to have to play outside his strengths. And
right.
I love that he knew that Jim talked about going to the Penguin, but it was Bullock realizing that he needs to go to the Penguin, and that's his role. He can play that role and stand up for Jim.
We talk about father figures a lot on this show, and I almost feel like he is shielding James like he's his father figure. He doesn't want James tainted by the bad in Gotham City. And he doesn't like that while he was away having his happiness, James had to wade into this darkness.
Right, right, yeah.
And him going to Oswald in this case, and this was when they had separated after they woke up from the gas and everything. Of course, neither one of them went home.
Exactly, yeah.
He went to go see Oswald, and then Gordon got waylaid and had to go save Lee. But Bullock goes to see Oswald, and you know, he says, I don't like what you did to James. And this is his way, I think, of redeeming this whole... He feels guilty that he's mm-hmm. tainted James a bit.
Right.
And he says, you know, he could have come to you, and he didn't. And I don't like that. I don't like that he feels like he couldn't have come to you because of this crap you pulled on him.
Yeah.
And I'm just letting you know right now, I'm not a big fan. I see you with Fish's umbrella waddling around so you can say you're king of New York or king of Gotham all you want, but you and I know you're not.
Yeah.
I know who you really are. Right. And of course, Penguin is cool and collected on the outside. He's good at that, at pretending. Mm-hmm. He has been pretending his whole life. So until the person turns their back, he can keep up that facade.
Right.
And only until then. As soon as they turn their back.
He explodes.
Yeah. Which is exactly what happens in this case. And then Bullock does, at the last minute, say, if one more thing happens, and he's on a hair trigger here, if one more thing happens, I'll get you for Fish.
Yeah.
Because Fish was his CI, and he did care for her.
Right.
So that is, it's not an empty threat. Well, I know this Penguin is the real Penguin, right? I mean.
Yeah, I don't think there's a doubt about that.
Okay.
Because I think the characters who have the names that they do in the comics, I don't think we really have to worry about them.
Okay, good.
Because I talked about Black Mask. Well, the Black Mask that we've seen is really the father.
Right.
Of, you know, so I think unless they have the given name of that character, I think, you know, we can say that they may be an archetype. But okay. for him, he has a name. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Okay. So there's no doubt that he's the Penguin, knock on wood.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's going to be perishing due to what he did to Fish.
No, no.
But there might be some retribution coming.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's going to be at Bullock's hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Bullock is very, very angry. It was plain to see in this scene that he was very angry. So, you know, to be continued in next week's episode, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely. And I love how we've talked about in this section that both Bullock and Jim are carrying weights. Mm-hmm. And everybody seems to be carrying a weight and trying to make up for something. And, you know, their motivation, you know, you've got those two, you've got Bruce who's trying to fight the corruption and, you know, he's angry about his parents. So you see that motivation and how much they take on them. And so it's interesting to see that storyline paralleled in different people in different ways, but, you know, to see it there in several different people.
Yeah. Yeah, his weight is fish, definitely. And this is the first time he's been able to articulate that to mm-hmm. Oswald.
Yeah.
And then to see it expelled also a little bit later in the episode where James takes the tape off the door. It let me exhale a breath that I didn't know I was holding.
Yeah. You know,
it was like, oh, that makes me feel a little better.
Yeah.
I felt a little better for James because he was very, very upset.
Yeah.
He was definitely, he was holding that whole thing in, thinking mm-hmm. it was his fault. And I still think he thinks it's his fault. I think that's part of what makes him Commissioner Gordon.
Right. I think that makes him tick. That's part of his character. And he has to learn to balance that out. He has to learn to make it work for him, but not just drive him nuts mentally. And thankfully, he's got Lee in his life to kind of be a counterbalance and speak some reason into his life and kind of see that. And so to build that out so that he is not just pushed over the edge and go mad with trying to solve it all and take it all on himself so that balance exists there.
Yeah, he definitely needs an outlet.
Yeah.
Definitely. He didn't have one until Lee showed up at the precinct.
Yeah.
And he was definitely taking it out on everyone.
Right.
So, yeah. So I think we've hit all the points on the episode.
Yeah.
Probably in too much depth, but there was a lot to take in on this one.
It very much was. It was the first episode of this season that I'm looking at the clock on my TV going, wow, we've only got, you know, X number of minutes left. It was moving that fast a pace. Mm-hmm. So
it was. It was very engrossing. And I kind of almost wish this was the season premiere.
Yeah, I can understand that, but we have to have that set up. And
I know
they did such a good job this season that I'm okay with being three episodes in, because some shows it's just, you know, it's not worth it.
Right.
Falling Skies, to me, there was just too much all over the board the last season and not enough in the actual, you know, kind of closing. So, but I think they've earned that right so far.
Yeah. I think I was thinking of last week's episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of thinking that last week's episode could have been a good season premiere with some of the first episode stuff thrown in. But this one had a huge impact on this season, I think. So we should go on to feedback.
Indeed.
I played that for the Arrow guys, and they thought it was chickens.
I heard. I was listening. So.
It sounds like bats, doesn't it?
Well, in context, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's no chicken noises in there at all. They're starlings.
Yeah.
Chirping, by the way. So there is a shout out to Arrow there, actually. Starlings.
Yeah.
Okay. So Todd on Facebook says, after tonight's episode, I wonder if what we are actually watching is Earth 2 Gotham. Anyone else is mind blown right now? And then you responded to him with our little theory that we think it's kind of Elseworlds.
Right, right.
Which is essentially, I've been saying that from the very beginning when I try to convince people that they should watch it.
Right, yeah.
And I hate to get into this whole debate that people are like, it's not Batman, it's not Batman. Well, of course it's not Batman, it's Elseworlds. It's just another universe.
Well, and that's the thing about the stories is how to explain that to people in a context that they can understand.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not a comics books person, then you may not understand that other reality. Some people, I tell the difference between a TV story and a book. You know, I talk about, you know, I've read most things that Stephen King has written. And, you know, you have stories in books and stories on TV or in movies. They're different levels of the Dark Tower.
Right.
The characters are the same, that you may have things in common, but things are vastly different. Right. So, you know, it just depends on what context of sharing with people, of saying, this is telling its own story. Even the movies have different contexts. You know, it's how best to explain that to, mm-hmm. you know, people who are not understanding, to say, yes, it's a Batman story. It may not be the Batman story that you're used to, but it is a Batman story. So,
you know, the ironic thing I find is that it's comic book fans that I have the most trouble talking into watching it.
I can understand that. And that reluctance there, because the canon is so beloved that you say it has to happen this way. You know, I can understand. We get passionate about things.
Sure.
And to say, okay, this is a different continuity. Just
but there's such an easy out by just saying it's an Elseworld. Period.
Right.
Done.
Yeah exactly.
It's not canon.
Yeah.
Just enjoy it for what it is.
Exactly.
You know, it doesn't have to be canon.
No.
Just enjoy it like it's, you know, someone else, like it's fan fiction.
I mean, well, you know, it's like I was just talking about Stephen King. I really enjoyed the short story, The Colorado Kid.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good short story for what it was. Haven, the TV series, very loosely based on Colorado Kid. But it tells such a different story that it's well worth watching, because it gives that spin and that new life to think about things differently. So
sure.
Yeah.
I would bring up Under the Dome, but I'm going to skip that.
Okay.
Okay. So how about you take Justina's feedback?
Sure. Hi, Karen and Jeff. I gave this episode 7 out of 10 silenced jokers.
Ooh.
So Jerome is dead, but not before he could leave his mark on inspiring some protégés. Is there evidence of this in the comics as well? I think I remember The Dark Knight with Heath Ledger. He had a bit of a clown posse following him at one point.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to stop here. The Joker, there are, you know, there's a Joker, but he has always inspired others.
Yes.
And to take that up, even in Batman Beyond.
I was just going to mention Batman Beyond. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Batman Beyond is a great series. And it just did so much with breaking ground and taking characters and putting them in a new setting. And so you had this squad who was inspired by the Joker and taking that up. And so, yes, there is a thing where he's inspiring, not necessarily taking that Joker mantle, but he does inspire that madness.
Yes. And in Batman Beyond, the Joker was either still in jail or dead, or I'm not sure whether they explained it completely. Did they?
Well,
did they?
I think they did. I'm
trying to remember. It's been
I
so
may
long.
Be zoning, but I thought I remembered then that him maybe showing up one time.
Okay.
I know we had Harley.
Yes. Oh, I know Harley was on.
Yeah. But maybe. Maybe he showed up, but that era, I'm a little fuzzy, so
yeah.
I would have
Justina, because I know she'll ask me later, Batman Beyond was a was a animated series where Bruce Wayne is a little too old to be Batman, so he recruits a younger person to put on the bat suit and become Batman. It's set in the future, and he is fighting younger Jokers that have been inspired by the real Joker. So that's what we're referring to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That is the perfect example of this.
Yeah, and I believe it's still on Netflix streaming.
Oh, yeah. Such a great show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right.
So continuing on, she says, when they called this season the Rise of the Villains, they were not playing around. Indeed. Gotham is crawling with bad guys and crazy people. I think Theo is going to have trouble with his sister soon.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. She was giving the evil eye to him and Barbara when she spied them flirting.
Yeah.
She says, I needed a scorecard to keep up with all the favors in this city. Thank goodness I have Gotham Undercover to help me keep it all straight. Aww. Have a super week, Justina. Thank you, Justina.
Thanks, Justina. You too.
And just to pass along, Justina is great in leaving us feedback, and she is one of the bloggers on GoldenSpiralMedia.com.
Oh, yes.
She blogs about some of the shows that may not be covered in podcasts, but she does an excellent job, and we're just thankful for her feedback.
Yeah, and she's one of my favorite people ever. She and I talk outside of the podcast as well. So
nice.
Hey, guys, is the next feedback. Love the podcast and love the new season of Gotham. I just wanted to throw in a crazy train of thought or two for the future of the Joker based on how the pieces fell out tonight. Now that Jerome has been taken care of, what if the mantle were to pass to his killer? Perhaps our pal Theo, who admitted to liking Jerome's laugh and stagecraft, becomes derailed from his ultimate goal of taking back Gotham by a jealous sister ominously triangulated behind a curtain at the end. Maybe somewhere down the road, Tabitha gets revenge for bird-dogging Barbara from her, and some sort of chemical accident, in quotes, happens that makes Theo permanently disfigured and insane. In this way, Barbara could become Harley, as some are predicting. She was pretty good with that mallet tonight. Besides, didn't the Joker always fancy himself the ringmaster, just as Theo does? I'll stop there in this case as well. Now, this is not the worst theory ever. However, I have to say, this would make Joker and Harley so much older than Batman that it would be a pretty big stretch for me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've got, you know, the timeline is fuzzy, but even, you know, that's how, you know, that was my question in season one. How are they going to introduce these villains and still have it believable that they're fighting Batman as adult, you know, all these years later? And because of his age, the Riddler, he's young. I can see that. He's 20s, something like that. I can see that.
Same with Oswald.
He's a little bit, you know, a little bit older than Bruce. But yeah, you're right. That would make a big age difference.
20 years older?
Yeah.
He'd be like in his old age when Bruce was becoming Batman.
Right, yeah.
Or, you know, older than midlife. So, yeah. I could see, you know, definitely him being one of the inspirers, of course. And I'm not doubting that he's going to lose some sanity, for sure, in this whole thing. You know, becoming a resident of Arkham, where he can also inspire some madness.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I don't think Barbara's going to be Harley either, although I wouldn't put it past them to make her the archetype of Harley.
Yeah, like we talked about that last week. Yeah, I agree. I don't see her becoming Harley, but she can be an inspiration.
Right.
Yeah.
Or maybe even the archetype of Harley / Joker, too. I mean, just another crazy for Gotham.
Right.
Okay, back to the feedback. It's not really a prediction, just a thought. And a good one, by the way, I have to say. More likely, they have set up the Joker as an idea, an elusive presence in Gotham that becomes a legend that casts a shadow over every senseless, senseless or psychotic homicide until the man we know as the Joker appears during the time of Batman. Sorry, guys, I have this cold. I'm really sorry. Already we see copycats springing up. This mythos would be even stronger if the body of Jerome were to disappear, in inverting the Christian view of no body as a sign of resurrection and hope into a cause for fear and dread.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty deep.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Tabitha sneaks in on her own and steals Jerome's corpse. This could also be a form of revenge on her brother if Theo believes that Jerome is out there somewhere, just waiting for the chance to pay him back for the double cross. Okay, enough aimless speculation. Ultimately, the show did a very good job of giving us the Joker without giving us the Joker, at least not yet. Keep up the great work and look forward to all your future podcasts. Best, John Morales. Thanks, John.
Thanks, John. Yeah, thanks so much.
Great email.
Yeah.
I love that sort of dissection.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about that I've enjoyed about podcasts since the lost days of listening to other people speculate, and then that just spins your thoughts off.
Yeah.
In that next directions. It's good to think about those things and bring in those aspects. And that's why we really enjoy having people give us feedback, because, you know, that might not have come into our thoughts, but you brought it in and now it gets other people thinking. So thanks so much.
Right. I love it. It's like a dialogue that we open between you and us too.
Yeah. Most definitely.
So, you know, we're all talking, we're standing around at the water cooler. So why don't you give them our feedback info?
So we would love to have your feedback. You can leave us feedback on the Facebook page like some people have, but we would love to have a little more direct feedback. So you could call us at 304-837-2278. You could go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback and leave us text, audio file attachment, or leave a message using the SpeakPipe widget. You can contact us using Gotham GSM on Twitter. And please subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review. Now, our feedback deadline is Thursdays at 6 p.m. So be aware of that. That may be a little bit different next week, but if it is, we'll give you a heads up on that. And one more thing, if you've been inspired and kind of looking at, okay, I need to dig deeper into Gotham and Batman and kind of want to look at things, we have a way for you to do that. If you go to goldenspiralmedia.com/support, there's a link there for Amazon. And what that does is that gives Golden Spiral Media some money from your purchase. It doesn't cost you anymore, but it gives us some money to kind of keep up with the upkeep of the podcast. And it gets you some good recommendations. You know, you can go in there and do your purchases and buy your Batman books and DVDs and kind of be a little more into things. So we encourage you to do that.
Agreed. Yep. So the only thing we have left tonight are a couple spoilers. And I do have spoilers for two episodes down the line. So it will be a little spoilery. So that's my warning. If you don't want to hear about the episode 2 weeks from now, as well as the episode next week, then tune out now. And for those of you who don't want to hear that, we'll say goodnight to you now.
Night.
And we'll see you next week. So here we go. Spoilers.
Spoilers.
I need to make a little spoilers. For next week, a new captain is called to action on an all-new Gotham, Monday, October 12th on Fox. Michael Chiklis joins the cast of Gotham, and another great casting call on this one. Captain Barnes, Michael Chiklis, is called to duty to create a law-abiding task force with the help of Gordon. Meanwhile, Penguin gets caught up in a favor for Galvan, and Enigma asks Kringle out on a date in the all-new Rise of the Villains Strike Force episode of Gotham, airing Monday, October 12th, 8 p.m. on Fox.
Nice. Is it Monday yet?
Yeah, right? I know. It's close. We're getting there. Halfway there. Yeah. I think he's going to be a good addition.
Yeah.
It's going to be like the Shield meets Batman, I think. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
And then the week after that, which I was excited to see that there was already a press release out for this one, Family Rivalries will resurface in the city on an all-new Gotham Monday, October 19th on Fox. Galavant and Penguin join forces with a dangerous family in Gotham. Then, as the rivalry between the Waynes and the Galavants resurfaces, Gordon struggles to maintain order in the city in the all-new Rise of the Villains Scarification episode of Gotham, airing Monday, October 19th, 8 p.m. on Fox.
Nice.
Scarification.
Yeah.
Oof. So, as we speculated, there is definitely a bit of a past between the Waynes and the Galavants.
Mm-hmm.
So he is going after Wayne Incorporated, Wayne Inc., Wayne, what is it? Wayne Company. Wayne
Enterprises.
Enterprises. Wayne Towers. Yeah, Galavant wants to be the new Trump, I guess. Is that?
I guess so.
Yeah. Apparently he blames the Waynes for not having his name all over everything. And that's what he's going to do.
Yeah.
And of course, Gordon's going to take up Bruce's cause.
Mm-hmm.
Not only because, you know, that's the right side, but he definitely has a stake in it because he cares for Bruce. So
exactly. Yeah.
It's going to be personal for him.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see how that shakes out. And this is why I went 2 weeks in advance, because I was excited to share that. When I heard that it was actually confirmation of a rivalry between the two families, I was very hyped up about it.
Yeah.
You know, that was only speculation up until this point. So, yay. And Scarification. I mean, mm-hmm. Does that mean another Joker thing or what?
Are you're leaving marks on both sides? You're leaving visible reminders of the wounds inflicted. So, yeah. So, you know, it'll be interesting.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, exciting things coming up for the next couple of weeks. I can't wait to talk about it.
Exactly. It
Crazy.
Is going to be great.
So we're done here. And as I promised earlier, we're going to go out on the speech given by the brilliant Mark Margolis as Paul Cicero.
Yeah.
At the end of the episode. And we shall talk to you next week.
See you next week.
You will be a curse upon Gotham. Children will wake from sleep screaming at the thought of you. Your legacy will be death and madness.